Beloved hearers of God's word, grace and peace to you from the one who was, who is to come. Amen. Please be seated. Many of you know I spend most of my time down on Wilkinson Road at the jail there. It's a maximum security provincial facility, correctional center, and I'm a public servant. I am employed by BC Corrections. And having a foot in the world of the jail, in the world of corrections, and a foot in the world of the church, in fact, I have probably more than a foot in both of those worlds, is a really wonderful and interesting experience. The mandate of BC Corrections is to offer safe and secure custody, firstly, and secondly, is to reduce reoffending. So the measures that we take, of course, to provide safe and secure custody for guys who have found themselves in our care are things that would ensure that they would be safe from other inmates who are there. We do our best to do that. We do our best to ensure that they're safe from self-harm. And in general, we try to keep the entire environment of the jail as kind of low risk, the safest space as it can be for a community. Secondly, as I say, reducing reoffending. And what that looks like is we try to offer for people who are interested in change, transformation, the most pro-social environment that we can, with as many resources and as many programs as we're able to offer to help guys build skills and to spend time sort of getting to know themselves and learning about themselves so that they can heal, mend, and change in a positive way. So, we offer a safe space and we offer as many opportunities as possible for people to change who are looking for change. It is not unlike our life together as church. We try to keep this place and all of our churches a safe place for everyone, a place where whatever walk of life you may have experienced, you can come here and you can feel welcome and you can feel safe and you can feel like this is a place where you can kind of just let your guard down. Secondly, we try to offer what we can to help each of us, hopefully on a journey of growth, a journey of change, those of us who are looking for transformation in our own lives. So there are similarities, many similarities. And it's not by chance that in the federal system, what do they call the jails in the federal system? Shout it out if you know. Penitentiaries, based on that old heavy church word again. Penitence. Penitentiary. It's a place where, you know, folks go to spend some time doing penance and doing the kinds of things that, the season of Lent is really all about. Well, in the church's wisdom, every spring or so, we are sentenced together to 40 days of deprivation. We are. It's not a mandatory sentence, of course. You can choose whether you want to enter into the spiritual disciplines of Lent. But it bears a striking resemblance to what happens when people enter the correctional system. So the church has sentenced us all here to 40 days, and we can use the time as we see fit, to work on ourselves and to change, or if we choose not to, Easter will arrive and we will be the same people that we are today. And, you know, I understand everybody's in a different place in their journey. And so it's up to each of us to decide how we want to use this time. Well, just like the church has its own vocabulary that it takes a while to learn, so do jails. Given that we have recently been sentenced to these 40 days, if we were in a jail, what we would be known as are new fish. You're all a bunch of fish, as am I. And so when you arrive, and you know, a fish is somebody who's new to jail, not accustomed to the etiquette and the rules and the culture, it can be a very vulnerable time. It can be a time when you can be taken advantage of, you can easily find yourself manipulated. But there are folks and inmates who will come alongside and try to give new fish a little bit of advice about how to make the most of their time, how to stay safe, and how to change, if that's what they're interested in. That brings me to the second bit of vocabulary. The inmates, when they try to communicate, when they want to communicate with each other, they want to do it kind of clandestinely, they'll write each other little notes. And they're very, very creative. If you've ever done a little time yourself, then maybe you already know all of this. But they're very creative at writing tiny notes that will be concealed in all kinds of different ways and be passed. And those notes are called a kite. It's called a kite. And given the similarities between the season of Lent and the kind of wilderness that we're invited to there, and the kind of wilderness that many of the guys that I work with through the week find themselves in, I thought it would be interesting if I asked the guys that I work with if they had any particular direction or advice for us to make the most of this season of deprivation and to maybe learn from their lived wisdom. And so what I have here is a kite for all us new fish, freshly smuggled out of the jail. The first thing that the guys would like us to know is that it is important, in order to stay safe, to figure out where we are and what kind of environment we're in. So if we find ourselves incarcerated, you want to know, you know, where's your cell? Where are the washrooms? Where's health care? Where do you go to rec? And you want to have a really good understanding of your surroundings. It's how you stay safe. It's how we stay safe in wilderness. Well, for us, you know, whatever wilderness we're invited into, led into by the Spirit, it's important for us to figure out what kind of wilderness we are in as well. What I mean by this is that if the wilderness we find ourselves in our life, our personal, our spiritual life, is a kind of a mountain forest, rainforest or Rockies, then that presents particular challenges and requires particular skills from us. You know, you gotta worry about being eaten by a bear or by a cougar. You gotta worry about falling down a cliff or the limbs of trees. One of the advantages is that if it's a mountain that we feel compelled to climb in this wilderness, the mountain's pretty much going to be there, and as long as we keep moving towards it and keep moving up it, we can feel a sense of progress. So that would be one kind of a wilderness we might find ourselves in. You might consider, as you're thinking about this time of Lent, if that sort of wilderness speaks to where you are in your life. On the other hand, there's a kind of wilderness that might even be more prevalent than that in our lives, and that is a desert wilderness. That's a kind of wilderness where, for miles and miles and miles, we don't see much of anything that distinguishes where we are. It's a kind of wilderness where there aren't many obvious resources, water, shelter. And in fact, we can go to bed at night thinking we know exactly where we are, and when we awake in the morning, The winds have blown the dunes and the sand, and it's a completely different landscape around us. And we once again find ourselves kind of right where we started, trying to get our bearings. The other thing about wilderness that looks like a desert is there are mirages. There are things that appear on the horizon that we think are real and concrete, and we'll be moving towards them only to be disappointed that they didn't turn out to be what they appeared at first. Second kind of wilderness, second invitation to figure out where we are. There's a third, and being a prairie boy, I don't know a lot about it, but I would say that, you know, if you're ever lost at sea and the waves crashing and rising and falling all around, that's another kind of wilderness too. And maybe for folk who have spent their life near the water, that's the kind of image of wilderness that speaks to your experience. So the first thing that the guys would have us do as we begin this sentence is to figure out where we are. What does our wilderness look like? What's our environment? After that, they say, get your ego under control. For many of us, our ego can get us in lots of trouble. It's very subtle sometimes. We live in a culture that really reinforces individualism and our kind of, you know, sense of ego. How dare you disrespect me? How dare you budge in line? You know, road rage? I think that's all about ego. That's about, who are you to come in front of me? I'm driving here today. And I'm guilty of all of this, okay? So, or what about you receive an email and you think, look at that tone. Why are they using that tone with me? Now, maybe they didn't mean to use that tone or didn't intend it, but it kind of is an affront to our ego that happens. Like, how dare you? Guys I work with at jail, we have an acronym. Some of you may know it, an acronym for ego. It's edging God out. Edging God out. It's when we decide, consciously or otherwise, to sort of put ourselves more in the place of God and push God more to the side. It's very easy to do. So all of the world religions that have stood the test of time have a teaching on, you know, one of our life's tasks is to get over ourselves, you know, get our ego out of control so we can be of use to the world. Never more important than when we find ourselves in a journey through the wilderness, because if we've got too much pride and ego, we're going to learn things the hard way. The other side of that coin is humility. It's humility. And that, too, is something that if we're to survive in this wilderness and to learn and grow, then cultivating humility will be an important spiritual discipline. And humility is, in my experience, not well understood. Again, the kind of caricature of humility is, I'm a worm, I'm a worm, I'm awful, I'm terrible, oh, you know. Which is not what humility is really about, not what true humility is about. True humility comes from, you know, out of the word humus, which is soil, earth, ground. And what real humility, genuine humility means is being planted on the ground, firmly rooted, planted in the ground. So it doesn't mean I'm, you know, all that in a bag of chips, I'm the most awesome thing ever, you know? But more importantly, or equally important, it doesn't mean I'm a worm, I'm awful, I'm terrible, I'm useless. Which is another, you know, these messages that can get stuck inside of our heads. No, it doesn't mean that. To be humble means to be honest, to know who we are, and to stand firmly on the ground saying, I'm not the best in the world, but I'm not the worst either. I am who I am. Got some good things, got some bad things, and got some blind spots. If we can be honest and we know that, then God can do a lot of work with us. God can do a lot of work with us. If we can't be honest, can't be humble and have our feet firmly on the ground, than, you know, for blaming other people or we're making excuses all the time. We kind of tie God's hands in a lot of ways. So ego and humility, they kind of go hand in hand. Another thing that the guys riding their kite would have us to remember in this 40 days is to practice gratitude. Practice gratitude, you know. Especially, you know, the guys I work with that are incarcerated, I always encourage them to keep a gratitude journal. You know, every night, to just write a couple of things that they're most grateful for, to lift those up to God. Because a little bit of gratitude can really get us through some pretty awful wilderness periods. And we have to really be intentional sometimes in order to do that. I think the more we develop our, you know, get our ego under control, and the more we work on our humility, the more open our eyes are and our ears are to actually seeing God at work around us and in us, and us being able to then find things to be grateful for. Because every day God gives each one of us a million different things to be grateful for, if we have eyes to see and ears to hear. The next thing the guys wanted me to pass on has a lot to do with our gospel today. Temptation. Temptation. So when we're through this period of Lent, we find ourselves in the wilderness, we're going to be tempted by all kinds of things. You know, maybe it'll be small things. I think I'll give up chocolate for Lent. Oh, wait a minute, there's that Aero bar. Oh, it's so good. You know? Or maybe it'll be larger things. Even Jesus himself was not immune to temptation. This is what our gospel tells us today. And in fact, I think that Jesus had an exceptionally healthy respect for the power, the seductive power of temptation. Because when his friends and followers came to him and say, tell us what the most important things are for us to pray, teach us how to pray, one of the things he said there is, lead us not into temptation. Notice, he didn't say, God, help me resist temptation. He said, God, help me to stay away from situations where I will be tempted in the first place. Don't even lead me into temptation. You know? Again, some of the guys who have a problem with addiction and with alcohol that I work with, you know, this isn't about, when I'm in the liquor store, God, help me to say no to all of these bottles. This is about, help me to not even go near that place. Lead me not into temptation in the first place. So then we don't have to rely so much on some willpower that we hope in that moment we can garner up. So whatever it is that leads us towards temptation in ways that are hurting our lives or hurting the lives of those around us, you know, it's another kind of area that we might pay attention to as we do our Lenten journey. The last thing that the guys wanted me to lift up for us today is forgiveness. Something to work on when we're in the wilderness. Forgiveness. Okay? Forgive everyone everything. What do you think of that? Forgive everyone everything. Boy, that's a tough one, you know? And I know I'm honest with the guys that I work with and say, there are some folks in my life that I really, really, really struggle to forgive. Indeed, I think forgiveness, though, is one of those things that, again, is quite misunderstood in our culture. Real forgiveness, true forgiveness. We hear, forgive and forget. And maybe there are many things that we can just say, oh, that was no big deal. No big deal, Bill. Forget about it, you know? Maybe there are things in our life like that. But that's not what real forgiveness is about. You know, if you were wronged, really wronged by someone, if you were abused as a child, if you were betrayed as an adult, how do we forget that? We don't forget those things. That doesn't mean we can't forgive. Because forgiveness is not saying what you did is okay. Forgiveness is saying there's not a thing we can do to change the past. So I'm going to choose to not have what has happened continue to control my life negatively going forward. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to carry the anger. I'm not going to carry the resentment, those feelings of revenge. I'm going to choose every day. See, 1 foot deeply in the jail. I'm going to choose every day to not let my life be controlled or destroyed by something that can't be undone. For that, we can forgive everyone everything. You know? They might not even know we've forgiven them. Doesn't mean we have to become best friends with folks who have wronged us. Doesn't mean that at all. First person we set free is ourselves. You know? And in turn, that sets free all of the people around us that see us hurting or that endure the effects of us carrying hurt. Again, good jail wisdom. Hurt people, hurt people. Hurt people, hurt people. So if we want to be people of peace, first thing we do is work on what is hurting inside of us. And then we won't hurt others. And we won't hurt ourselves as much. So forgiveness. Forgive everyone everything. Or at least let's do our best. So, my friends, how will you spend your 40 days, the next 5 weeks? We are all doing time the next 5 weeks. What will you choose to heal? How will you choose to be different when Easter comes? And when Christ rises a new creation, how will you too rise a new creation? That's the question for you in this time and in this Lenten wilderness. And I hope that we will listen to the sages who have penned this kite for us, new fish, on this day. Amen.